The subject for today's session is I've entitled the Full Nest Syndrome. This week I've been taking a look at, or we've been taking a look at the life cycle of a family of individuals. One of the other sessions has to do with midlife, the midlife years of the adult. Another session had to do with the adolescent years. The first session that I did was an overview of the whole life cycle and the church's. The subject for today's session is I've entitled the Full Nest Syndrome. This is the third session, or maybe the fourth session in this week. This week I've been taking a look at, or we've been taking a look at the life cycle of a family of individuals. One of the other sessions has to do with midlife, the midlife years of the adult. Another session had to do with the adolescent years. The first session that I did was an overview of the whole life cycle and the church's responsibility and what the church can do. And the last session that I will be doing on this will be entitled The Healthy Family, Myth or Real. But today we'd want to deal with the Full Nest Syndrome. How do we deal with the boomerang kids? And maybe I need to begin by defining what I mean by the boomerang kids. The boomerang kids are young adult people who have left their parents' home and then returned for a variety of reasons. Statistically, there are nearly 22 million adults, 18 years of age and above, who live with their parents, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The same statistics show that this number of 22 million represents 54% of this age group, compared to 48% back in 1980. All in all, it is a 50% increase since 1970. And there are several factors. Let me list just a few of them. Factors for people to move back. We'll be talking about this as our session goes on. But number one is the high cost of housing. And these aren't listed in any particular order, but these are five issues or five factors. One of them is the high cost of housing, where the young adult is unable to purchase any type of housing. Second is the tight job market. Graduating from college does not necessarily guarantee you a job. Number three is the late marriages. The average age of marriage is creeping upward for the young adults. There's a high divorce rate. One of the highest divorce rates happens with young adults early in their 20s. Usually the younger the people are that married, the more difficult it is for the marriage to succeed. So there's a high divorce rate in this age group. And then there tends to be a trend towards advanced education. More and more people are finding that in order to get a leg up in the job market, there's almost a need to have a master's or a doctorate degree, so the trend towards advanced education. All of these trends, including the statistics, show no sign of letting up, and in fact, the number of people moving home seems to be increasing year to year. In a book entitled Boomerang Kids, How to Live with Adult Children Who Return Home by Phyllis Stegall, S-T-E-G-A-L-L, she compares the classical and the modern scenario for the boomerang kid, or kids. The old classical scenario used to be that a woman got divorced and was therefore forced to move home with or without the children. That was usually the classical type of boomerang kid, and it dates back decades. The more modern scenario includes more and more men, more and more young adults, the numbers wise, and that they're returning home because of not only divorce, but basically other issues such as unemployment, mounting college debts that they can't pay off, and financial instability. Stegall goes on to say, and I quote, "This generation doesn't save much and are less able to make ends meet," unquote. She also goes on to point out that they are reluctant to make concessions. They don't consider such options as shared housing or cutting back on lifestyle or taking a less than ideal job. Okay. In a book entitled The Not So Empty Nest, Phyllis Fehrenstein has this wonderful quote. The adult child who comes home to live is like a guest who got the date wrong and shows up just as the host and hostess are taking their shoes off and planning a cozy evening for two. Now, with this moving back, there's a downside to it and there's an upside to it. There's the problems and then I think there's some opportunities. And I want to talk about both areas. First, beginning with the downside or the problems. It seems that hard times hit these young adults just when the parents are settling into retirement and in a sense beginning a new life for themselves. Or if they're not settling into retirement, they're planning for it. When they shove that last kid out the front door, no sooner have they done that than the oldest one or the second oldest one is knocking on the back door, coming back. Just when the parents are moving to a new type of life for themselves, and in many cases it's the retirement ages. Another downside could include such wonderful things as the crumpled beer cans in the living room to the crumpled fenders in the driveway, to lack of privacy in the bedroom, to a crowd in the kitchen, or a big crowd in the bathroom. Okay. In taking these people back, and taking the young adult back, parents often experience several feelings. Let me list just a few of them. There's a feeling of resentfulness and anger. The parent becomes resentful or angry at having their own plans shattered or having to change their plans after all these years. The parents tend to feel somewhat guilty about the child's return to the nest, and they also see the return as a failure in parenting. You know, this child should have been old enough to go out and do their own thing. This is part of what the American story says, the American way of life. But instead, the child has returned home, and the parents take it as a reflection on their parenting skills. They didn't parent well enough. So there's this sense of failure. After an initial resentment, most parents begin to respond very sympathetically, almost over-sympathetically. They adopt an attitude of, my child needs me. My child needs me. But this honeymoon doesn't last very long. The stress generated by the return is not, by any means, a one-sided affair. And we're going to talk about that in a little later also, but let me repeat that. Stress generated by this return is not by any means a one-sided affair. Now, there can be an upside to this. This moving home can offer some wonderful opportunity. First off, it can be a time of joy, a chance to really get to know each other as they've never known each other before. A chance to really get to know each other. Secondly, or with this time of joy, it's an opportunity to clear up some unfinished business. Maybe for the parent to explain a little more on an adult-adult basis why they got a divorce or why they made a certain move or something on that line. Second off, it's an opportunity to phase out the parent-child relationship of the past and move toward a new adult-adult relationship with all its potential rewards. But, you know, this doesn't just happen. It takes a lot of work. Now, what is the root of the problem? What is the root of the problem? Why is it so difficult for people who've lived together for nearly two decades to go on living together for another year or two? Well, I think the main problem is that the young adult's relationship is in such a state of flux. Okay, they graduated from college or vocational school or whatever, and everything's in a state of flux. Their relationships, they're overpowered by the expense of everything. Just breaking the ties with the home and getting out, finding that first job, everything like that. Everything's in a state of flux. Okay. I think another point is that the young adult is trying to hang on to a vulnerable new identity this new emerging young adult identity, while fighting the reemergence of the child within, which his or her parents' presence constantly summons. If they are the youngest of the family, mom and or dad is up. Usually mom is reminding them that they are the baby of the family. Okay, but there's, whenever mom and dad are around, this young adult can feel this reemergence of this child within. And at the same time, they're desperately hanging on to, the new identity that they've been forging, or they're trying to grasp this new identity. Another point is parents, one of the other problems is that parents, here the parents are, and they must deal with a person who behaves like a trustworthy adult on one moment, and on another moment is an irresponsible child the next. That's part of the problem too. This going back from the young adult to the child. Okay. The trustworthy adult on one hand and the irresponsible child on the next. And another point is that the difficulties stem from the fact that most young adults are not living at home because they really want to. The vast majority of them don't want to live at home. They want to be gone. They want to have their independence, their individual self. Okay. The symbols the symbols of adult life are a career and a romantic relationship. A young adult often stays or comes back home because he or she is having trouble in one of these two areas, either area of career or the area of the romantic relationship. Robert Frost once said that home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. Every so often, you can read a letter to Ann Landers where someone's talking about, you know, my son or my daughter moved back, and I thought it was going to be for a short time, and they've been living now here for 6 years, and it doesn't seem like they're ever going to, you know, and this and this, and they're just complaining. And she always writes back and say, hey, set a time. Give them 2 more months to find a job, then they're gone. You know, you have to do that sort of thing. But the whole idea of expectations, yeah, it's very important.
Jim, where did those figures come from? 54%, did you say?
That's from the United States Census Bureau. I don't know if you want to trust them, but...
I can't believe it.
Yeah. 54% of that age group is living at home as compared to 48% in 1980. It's a 50% increase since 1970. But it isn't all negative, and I want to say that again. It isn't all negative. And it isn't because these people don't want to go out and get a job. I think part of our society and our culture and our economic situation is dictating that you can't do it. You know, the cost of higher education is going through the ceiling, and so they mount up these debts, and then they don't know what to do with it when they come back. So they have to go home. And then special cases too, all the time. The divorced couple, the house remodeled. That's going on. I'll have to remember that. I'm going to add that one. The wanting to go on for higher education, a master's degree or doctorate degree, sometimes with the cost of that, the people have to move home for a while. And what I'm trying to say, it isn't negative, it can be positive, but there are negative aspects of it because some people don't know how to handle it. Yeah.
I still think, as a child, to move back to your home, it was that parent-child relationship. How do you get from that relationship, a parent-child relationship, to adult relationship? I mean, I'm curious. I know what you're saying about having the money in the refrigerator, respecting each other's needs. But didn't your parents still treat you like the child? I mean, how did you get from that point, mother-child, father-child, to relate?
Maybe that's an ongoing process through life.
I think you have to constantly work on that. Because when I go back home, I feel differently in their house. You become as a child, even though you don't want to. But you're very independent on your own. But when you're in their home, especially if you've been away for a while, it's very hard. I don't know. And it's nothing they really do. It's a feeling that you have inside of you.
How do you get from the from the parent-child relationship to an adult-to-adult relationship, and that's what you're asking, right?
Right. How do you do that?
This gentleman back here has the answer.
I think that you never overcome that, really. I mean, it's the maternal instincts. You know, my mom still calls me Donnie. Even though professionally I'm known as Don or Donald, but, you know, I'm still Donnie. No matter how much backpacking and hiking I've done, I'm still told to watch it around creeks and glaciers. And she always reminds me of some dream she had that I fell through a lake that was frozen or something, you know. That goes on and on and on. I don't think that ever ends. I think your mother and your father are always your mother and father. They're always concerned for your welfare, and they it's not that they don't think that you can't think for yourself. I think it's that they just have that constant umbilical cord that's never cut. But in my own personal relationship, I've never had to go home. I've been lucky that way. But you know, I think a certain degree of respect grows, though, that as your parents watch you and they see that you are successful and you're going forward through life, there's a certain respect, and that they do convey that to you. But I don't think you ever get rid of the parent-child relationship. I think it's always there. I don't know too many families that it isn't.
That's true.
Yeah.
It gets worse. And I have a book called My Daughter, My Friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I am reading it, and I am trying, but it keeps on because they live by the lake, and they have five children. And now I'm constantly thinking of telling my daughter, be careful, if the water gets deep right away. Please see to it that the children don't get near the water.
It's probably something that we develop and can never really... really take it over. Yeah.
If you live long enough, those roles are reversed usually. The child becomes the parent.
Yeah.
And the parents are the ones who are taken care of.
Is
and they're looking out for you. But you gotta be patient and wait for that time.
Gotta be patient and wait for the time. Oh, more hands. Yes. Right here.
I think sometimes that the parent-child relationship staying on comes from the child's aspect as much. It's difficult for me to carry on a conversation with my grown sons without them thinking I'm trying to mother them, and I'm not. I'm just trying to carry on a conversation if I make a suggestion or something like that.
Like a mother.
Oh, mother.
Oh, mother.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'm not. I'm just trying to be an adult with them.
Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Over here.
I think it makes a difference. About the people involved, we have six children, and our oldest son, who was responsible when he was two, we never felt like we had to treat him as a child, even when he was still a minor. We live in a college town, he went to the university there, took a couple years off, went away, came back, and to our surprise, wanted to live with us again to complete university, and we were thrilled to have him because we had two teenage daughters who could use another adult figure around. And
to keep them in line, yeah.
That worked out very well.
See, there is that positive aspect. It can work. It can work, definitely. Anybody else?
Is this an American phenomenon, Tim?
Boy, that's a good question. I was going to ask the distinguished professor from Brazil if they have the same difference.
In fact, it's more prevalent in Europe.
Is it really? It's more prevalent in Europe.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you can't buy a house in Europe. You either inherit it or you rent an apartment.
Okay.
So they tend to be more planning to live together. And you get married, your wife lives in with you and your parents, or vice versa. That's the way it goes.
And I think it might stem also too from our independence. As American, that is ingrained in us, this idea that I'm finished here and I'm going off on my own, and we have a difficulty with the idea that maybe I can't make it. I'm going to have to rely on the family more often, or for a longer period of time. And I do hope that that we do realize it's, you know, I have never had to return home, but I know that if I would have had to, I would have been welcomed with, you know, wide open arms, and that's a wonderful feeling to know that. I've counted on my family of origin for other support, you know, either financially in the past or, you know, emotionally or whatever, but I've never had to move home yet. I haven't found my parents yet either. They keep moving too fast.
That was interesting what you shared about, you know, if you had had to go home, you would have been warmly welcomed. For me, it was the opposite. I completed 2 years of college, and 4 days before I turned 20, I got married. And about the last thing my dad said to me before we left on our honeymoon was, you know, you're welcome for a visit, but, you know, don't expect that you're going to come back. And his relationship was that if my husband and I had a little spat, that I wasn't to see that I was, you know, to come home. Now, if I had been battered or, you know, in very dire circumstances, they would have never turned me out. But my father made it very clear to me that if I made the choice to get married, that, you know, then I best make the choice to work it out. And so that, it's not ever been an option, but and I think anything less than being battered, I would have looked elsewhere for my support, because he made it very clear that I was basically on my own.
Okay. Yes?
I think a sense of humor, though, is the most essential thing.
Ooh, yeah.
Because, you know, I'm sure I mother our kids, but for the most part, I think of them as friends. You know, they're old enough now. But I think they laugh about my foibles. In turn, I laugh about theirs. And they say, you shouldn't call us kids anymore. And I tell them, I have to put up with some things with you. That's one of the things you've got to put up with me. It's sort of a give and take. And if you grow up with a sense of humor and able to laugh at yourself and teach them to laugh at themselves, it sort of helps.
Yeah. I'm the youngest one of three, so you know what my mother still calls me, right? And she always follows up by saying, oh, you don't like to be called that, do you? And she laughs, and I laugh, and I go, and I give this, right, you know, so.
But it doesn't spoil your relationship.
No.
And that's the point.
No, not at all. I would probably feel worse if she stopped doing that. Now, there was a point in my life when it did bother me, adolescence and all that, where I didn't want to be labeled as that, but now, I don't believe her anyway.
So. There's an interesting other aspect of this that occurred to me. My experience is one of the German tradition. My wife is culturally German, and in Germany, Don's right, the place of Germany, the families live together. And a lot of times the parenting is abdicated to the grandparents. But on the other hand, when the parents get older, the kids take care of them. Mm-hmm. They don't put them into a home. Mm-hmm. And that's not my personal preference or my wife's, but we have seen that in visits to Europe. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a nice turnaround. The parents know that when they need to be taken care of, their kids will be there for them, mm-hmm. often in the same house.
Yeah. We'll put ourselves in a retirement home.
What's this?
I say we put ourselves in a retirement village.
Ah.
So wasn't up to
it
the
goes
children.
Both ways sometimes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they said that was the greatest gift we ever gave them.
No.
Just knowing they weren't going to have to worry about us in our old age.
Yeah. Now, of course, what was mentioned somewhat before was during this time, the parents also go through changes. The long-postponed dreams are drawing closer, such dreams as a smaller house, or more travel, or retirement. Not so nice things that happen as time goes on, the other stresses that are brought on by possible loss of job, or declining health, and other aspects. So you have the parents on one side dealing with this, and then the young adult dealing with some of these other aspects too. There are some parental mistakes that I'd like to run through real quickly. And would recommend that these be avoided. And some parents have difficulty. Some adults have difficulty with it. Some humans have difficulty for that. It doesn't really matter what their age is. But in order to build a better relationship, you need to avoid the urge. First, you need to avoid the urge to control. The idea of treating the returning young adult as a high school student, someone that's still in high school. And this has been pointed out to be the number one enemy in good relationship is trying to categorize anybody into another category where they don't really belong. In other words, treating the young adult as a high school student, or treating the high school student as an elementary child or junior high child or something. Another one is the urge to baby. And you can tell who has fallen into this trap by how much laundry they do for the young adult, by how many bills they end up paying, and by the excuses they make, such as, oh, she works so hard, or it's the last time I'll really have a chance to do this for them. There's also the temptation to drag, and this is a key one, there's also that temptation to drag the young person into the conflict between the couples. A lot of times this returning young adult, who they see as a young adult, will be seized as the unbiased observer during the argument. And the difficulty part of this is that the young adult also finds it very difficult to break out of these triangles. Mom or dad will, because this is a young adult and this adult is supposed to understand what's going on between this, during this little spat, this little argument, we pull this person in for this unbiased position. And that puts that young adult in a very uncomfortable position. Very uncomfortable. And it's very hard for them to break out of that. There isn't any real, unless they just probably turn around and walk out and say, no, forget it. But they don't want to do that. At times they want to be helpful to both parents, and yet they're kind of being asked to side with one of the parents, and that's unfortunate. Okay, another one is, the urge to hold on. There's this urge to hold on. It's hard to wave goodbye after 20 years to 20 plus years together, right? In most cases. Now, I know there are some cases. My one brother, it wasn't too hard for parents or to send him away. He's a nice guy now, but we needed to get him out of the house early. I hope he never listens to this thing. But see, half of a parent will say, I'll go crazy if he or she doesn't get out, while the other half is saying it will never be the same again once they are out. See? Kind of weigh that. Some parents unconsciously discourage their kids from moving out by always finding fault with the salary that's been offered to them. Oh, is that all you're getting? You're worth more than that. I wouldn't take that job if I was you. By finding fault with the salary, by finding fault, let's say, in the terms of the apartment lease, little nitpicking things, they'll always find fault with something that's going on. Or by the job location, you have to move where? I wouldn't move there. You don't want to move out of this town, do you? Okay. Another one that needs to be kind of worked on to improve the relationship, let's say, is avoid letting guilt call the shots. Now, all parents, and I'm a younger parent, I guess, I don't have kids leaving the nest yet, though at times I really want them to. All parents carry some guilt around. I want to make a distinction between big guilt and little guilt, okay? Big guilt is feeling terrible years later because you moved just before, let's say, Danny's senior year, or got a divorce, or divorced Sarah's father when she was 13 or something. That's the big guilt, and you're still carrying that around, and you kind of feel that in order to make amends, I'm going to take this person back in and, make it all good again. The little guilt is feeling bad about going out to dinner on a Saturday night when Emily, who has just moved home, doesn't have a date. Okay, it's like shutting off your own social life in order to take care of little Emily here. Okay, yesterday's guilt makes it impossible to evaluate today's situation realistically. Okay, you got to let go of that guilt. You can't start this relationship, you can't be dealing with the young adult as they're moving back, when you're carrying around, when your agenda is based on that guilt that you're carrying around from something that happened 10, 15, 20 years ago. Okay. Some suggestions now on improving the relationship. This we've kind of mentioned before. One gentleman talked about it. First off, you need to discuss the expectations which with each other beforehand. Okay, set the guideline and rules, expectations. Ask them what they expect when they move home. And if you don't like what they expect, you tell them what they're going to get when they move home. The very act of negotiating issues puts relationships on a new footing, giving everyone greater equality. And it kind of moves that up from the parent-child aspect more into the adult-adult, where you can sit down and talk about it. Okay? And you negotiate length of stay. You know, how, when and how are they going to be out looking for a job if that's what they're needing to do. Overnight guests. You know, if they're single, what's going to be the regulation? Now, I read a wonderful thing, and I believe it was written to either Ann Landers or, you know, someone on that line, where this, I believe it was a mother writing, and she was really, really upset with the whole idea of overnight guests. And she went into this long stuff. Well, she, you know, this is her choice and stuff, but it's still my home, and I feel very uncomfortable. And I believe Ann Landers wrote back to her and said, "That's the key part. It's your home, and if you're uncomfortable with it, then it should not happen. Then you have to sit down and renegotiate. You have to sit down and tell them, this is my home. You know, I feel uncomfortable about this, so it's not going to happen." Another one: kick that guilt habit. Accept the idea that you, like everyone else, are imperfect and make mistakes. And if you can get to that point, you can also see that your kids aren't as perfect as maybe you thought they were, and that's wonderful too. You can begin seeing your own kids as being imperfect. Reveal yourself. It's a wonderful opportunity. Turn off the old tapes. Talk about feelings. Talk about what's important in your life. Talk about, you know, to this young adult about where you are in life, what your journey is. Be open to the child's emotions. That's part about also revealing yourself. You open yourself up to their emotions. Be the one to, on occasion or when necessary, to initiate changes. Ask yourself, what do I want? How can I let them know what I want? How can they help me? How can I help them? And then finally, how do you know it's the time to go for them? Not yourself, I better. It's time for me to pack up and I'm leaving. When should the young be on his or her way? How does a parent go about giving the nudge? Well, actually, I don't think there's any hard or fast rules about it. But the consensus among around all the experts and the few books that are out and a few articles and the like, and they all come to one key. And they say that the key is whether the young adult is making progress toward independence. In other words, if while they're living at home, if they're still, you know, if they're attempting to make moves to become independent, you know, they're going to school, they're studying, they're looking for a job, they're getting that all lined up, they're working part-time, you know, something. If they show that they're in that process of still, you know, becoming independent and will be breaking out, then that's okay. You know, then they're going along. Is he or she still looking for a job, or are they making excuses? Oh, there's no jobs out there. You know, no one wants to pay what I want. Well, what do you want? $50,000 a year to begin. That'd be nice. Sure. Are his or her studies heading towards some type of commitment, or is he or she just procrastinating or becoming a professional student? Say, I was in college, graduating from college in 71, I believe. And I remember there was a guy who lived across the hall who was in his seventh year of college for no particular reason except he just enjoyed going to college. Seventh year of college. And I graduated, and you know, he was there, and I thought he was an upperclassman. I ended up graduating, he still wasn't graduated. And as far as I know, he still may be in school 17 years later or so. Ask parents, you know, to help know when that little nudge needs to be, or when they are ready. You need to ask yourself some questions, such as, am I making it too easy for him or her? Now, let's face it, if I was living at home, and I had a nice job, and I would come home in the evening, there'd be a nice, wonderful meal always prepared for me, and my room was cleaned out, and my laundry was all put away for me, you know, I may not want to move out into my own apartment at all. You know, it sounds too good now. So ask, you know, am I making it too easy for him or her? Ask, is the kid serious about finding a job or saving money? See, young adults have a difficult time in saving. They have a wonderful way of living off of parents while they go out and, you know, go out Friday night and Saturday night and Sunday night all night. You know, have fun with the gang and spend a lot of money, and yet a lot of times they aren't putting money into them staying at home. So. Does the child's overall pattern indicate a responsible attitude? They want, you know, like I've been saying, they want to be independent, but they aren't willing to help, you know, foot the bill. And a lot of times, and I've seen this, and this is the sad aspect, and many times parents get stiff by kids who owe loans, but who can also find money for their next drink or their little sports car or their next record or tape album or their sporting equipment or their backpacking equipment or what else. You know, they have all these loans, but don't know how I'm going to pay that off. I need to move home. And then for some reason they can always find that little extra money for all the little things. I know of this is a true story. I know of a young adult who moved home after about half a year after graduation from college, just couldn't make it meet. You know, was out there in the apartment, and son of a gun, just too expensive, too many loans. Moved home. The parents thought they had a nice negotiated thing with, you know, situation, and they worked on this, and it was fine, and we'll help out for a while. Within a month after he moved home, he joined PacWest Athletic Club. He joined a weightlifting club. You know, he purchased his backpacking equipment. He was all set, you know, he was getting in all this. You know, comes home and announces that, and the parents, wonderful parents that they are, they just kind of looked at him and said, that's wonderful. You know, you have 30 days to find another place to live. You know, that's fine. But if you're going to do that, you're back out. So they shoved him back out. Little forceful. So I have a couple closing, just a closing statement, and then we can talk about this some more. Okay. It should be acknowledged that not all kids need to leave home to achieve a healthy independence, and not all parents need their children to leave to view them as adults. Many families have already made the transition by the time the child graduates from high school. If the young adult is responsible within the family and has an active life outside of it, parents need not be overly concerned. Although living together can be difficult, it forces parents to think about the kind of relationship they want with their grown children. Those who summon up the courage and discipline and patience to forge a new way of communicating are liable to reap rewards much greater than a harmonious household. They can look forward to a new adult-to-adult relationship that's a lot like friendship and might even be a lot like love. Okay. Any questions or comments on this, what I've shared with you? Any more? We have a few minutes. Yes?
Don't you believe a lot of this is fed by the yuppie-dom that has come about, the kids that are going to college today, they get all these huge wants, and it's created, you know, this big want. I mean, to graduate from college and have a Beamer and have a big $50,000 job. And, you know, I mean, $50,000 down to $35,000, you know, when I went to college and graduated, I didn't have all these huge wants, and I was willing to, you know, sacrifice and live in a,
yeah,
you know, not a not so good apartment, but still, I don't know. That's what I view it.
Yeah. When I went to college, my want was to get out of college. That was the only want that I wanted, was to get out. Outside of that, yeah, I don't know, but that's a good point. I see some hands going up on that, so let's see what they have to say. Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. First of all, being an employer and hiring people out of college and that sort of thing is My view.
Can you speak a little louder?
Okay. My view of a true yuppie, he does have a $50,000 job. He has a condo and Beamer. He's not living at home. Mm-hmm. He may be using a leasing car heavily, but he's not at home. But the thing that I've noticed as an employer, that the new attitude coming out of college, like when you and I probably came out of college, we just wanted to get the heck out and get to work. These guys that I hire, they expect me to pay them some phenomenal salary, and every time they learn something new, they want a raise. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling them, hey, you know, I can train a monkey to do your job, so don't, you know, don't, just because you have a college degree, that gets your foot in the door, but it's not going to keep you in here, mm-hmm. you know, so don't. But there is a definite mentality that I've noticed just in recent years in hiring guys out of college. It's like in college, they're being ensconced with the idea that you're worth some bucks when you get out of here. The 40 grand or the 50 grand a month pop paid to get you through college, you know, is going to guarantee you, you know, the Porsche and the garage and all that stuff. Well, mm-hmm. sorry, Jack, it doesn't work that way in mm-hmm. real life. But getting to the what you're talking about, the empty nest and then returning to it and that sort of thing, I've watched a couple of mistakes made just from personal observation. One being a brother-in-law who keeps returning to the nest, and the other being my brother, who's younger. In both cases, they're the youngest. Mm-hmm. And what I see is that the parents in both cases run to the child's rescue too much. You know, the younger brother, he has not come home, but they get in a bind because they make mistakes, and mom and pop run to the rescue, one mom and pop for one family or other. And so that it's easy for them to continue making mistakes and overspending and getting into trouble because they haven't learned to be independent yet. And with the other brother-in-law, it's like they keep setting them up in business and they get them jobs. And the kid, you know, a long time ago I got in a fight with my in-laws and I said, leave the kid alone. Just don't run to his rescue. Make him pick himself up and learn himself, because he's not going to fly on his own if you keep picking him up, you know, all the time. It's just, that's a major mistake that I see made a lot of times just from personal observations. The parents tend to run to the kid's rescue.
The first loan that my wife and I asked of my parents, and it was a real small loan, and that was fine. The second time, my dad sat down to talk about how much interest we're going to pay back on that loan. So then I had to weigh the fact: is it better to go to a bank or to my parents? And we went about it by borrowing against our insurance policy, which we never even knew that we were able to do. And we were able to get a small loan off of that. And it worked wonderful, but that was education. And that was part of what my father was trying to teach, too. And the third loan, the interest rate has gone even worse. It's terrible. I can't borrow from anybody. No.
I think it starts even when the child's very young.
Louder, please.
I think it starts when the child's very young before he even thinks about leaving home. Mm-hmm. And the child has to be responsible for his own clothes. I mean, gets a basic job or can do this, that part of that money goes to what he has to do to take care of himself. And he has to save part of it has to go into the bank, you know, and the rest of it you can put on something else. But I think the training begins at home early on.
If the kids are reaching adolescence and they don't know how to do laundry, you know, they need to know that before they get up there. I think that's one aspect. They need to start learning to cook at an earlier age and all that aspect. So you bet. That helps. That helps. Didn't help me, but it helps a lot of other people. So, anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
When parents don't, one is for the kids staying and the other parent is for the kids going,
problems. Yes, you do. Next question. Are you wanting me to answer? Like what to do in case of?
Have you got any parent or marriage counseling?
That's what may lead to. That's what it may lead to. I think both parents. I think. The parent who's begging for the child to stay needs to really take a real close look on the reasons why. I think so. Are they really setting up the pattern that the kid will keep doing this? Or, you know, how are they helping this young adult becoming independent, and by really wanting them to stay home is not helping them become independent.